Kadosh. Remember, remember, Adonai Eloheinu.
Welcome to Romamu, an open-hearted Jewish community and house of worship, learning, and spiritual growth. You're listening to Romamu's podcast, where we share words of Torah, insights, and inspiration from Romamu clergy. Thank you for being with us.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the wisdom of the week, the parsha of the week. Begin by saying that for all of us here, life has become a bit heavier over the last 6 months, to say the least. And in many ways, life has been heavier, is even heavier than we could have imagined when we imagined getting past the last president before Biden, whatever your beliefs are, but a lot of us were like waiting for that moment, waiting for the pandemic to end. Everywhere we look, it feels as if we're experiencing unprecedented tragedies, unforeseen turn of events in the direction of destruction, devolution, devastation. Despotic regimes, dictatorships, and deranged regimes. It feels as if the evolutionary arrow is pointing in the wrong direction sometimes. And sometimes it feels as if our deepest belief in the possibility of progress is being questioned. Well, that's how my dear friend and longtime Romamu member and board member Ari Wallach began part one of his new PBS series, A Brief History of the Future, which aired this past Wednesday night. Doom and gloom and the accompanying despair and depression, he said, are natural byproducts of seeing the world through the lens of what is wrong. And there's plenty wrong. Over the course of that hour, and many more to come over the next five Wednesdays, Ari highlighted many points of light, however, that are in our world, many innovators and creatives working on solving today's problems in order to birth tomorrow's better future. In a world that is about to experience an eclipse of the sun's light this coming Monday, looking for light amidst a very dark period felt for me in that moment like an exercise in a spiritual gym, working on my atrophied hope and optimism muscles. But despite an evening in the spiritual gym last Tuesday night, life for many, and certainly for our Jewish community, continues to present us with conflicts and crises. We feel, as many here experience today, that the ground literally shook beneath us. Many of us feel shaken and destabilized on the very solid ground that refuses to remain solid. One of the last songs that the great poet Leonard Cohen wrote had these words: "You want it darker," he said. "They killed the flame, killing the flame, killing the light, eclipsing the sun." This weekend, in the Torah, in the Parsha of the week, in the As the Torah Turns, kind of the weekly saga of Torah, we will read Parshat Shmini, otherwise known as Leviticus, chapter 9 through 12. This week's Torah portion has in it the terrible and inexplicable, mysterious story of Nadav and Avihu, the two eldest sons of Aaron the priest, the nephews of Moses and Miriam, whom the Torah tells us, in a fit of excitement, in a fit of energy, in a fit of innovation, after seeing fire descend from heaven in the end of chapter 9, consuming what was on the altar, in the very next moment, the Torah tells us, Nadav and Avihu, they took, Vayikhu, Nadav and Avihu, Ish Machtato, each one of them took one of their pans, and they put it in fire into the pan, and they went into the Holy of Holies. And the Torah tells us, Vayakrivu Eish Zara, Asher Lo Tziva Otam, they brought an uncommanded fire, almost Prometheus-like, stealing fire inappropriately. And another fire, a second fire, not this one consuming the offering that is appropriate, not this one a sign of divine acceptance, but divine anger, it would seem, comes out of heaven and takes them. Vayamutu, and they died. This took place on the very first day of a long-anticipated opening of the tabernacle. The Israelites had built the tabernacle painstakingly, detail by detail, until finally that day when it was opened and the fire came out, they thought, oh, it's working. All of that work was for something. And then the very next moment, trauma, shock, disbelief. Aaron, the father of Nadav and Avihu, Vayidom Aharon, Aaron is silent. He doesn't know what to say. And the Torah itself, just parenthetically, the Torah will repeat this story four more times throughout the Torah, making this the most oft-repeated story in the Torah, as if to say that the shock of this moment, even the Torah can't work it through. This event, which comes out of nowhere and is decidedly dark, not a happy moment in the Torah when Nadav and Avihu are taken, has 2,000 years of commentary. The commentators, some of them like my friend Ari, search for light amidst a very dark story. And even though this search for light in this fiery, dark story will glean an immoral meaning, even if it is incongruous, is better than no meaning at all. And so we have schools of thought about what happened. One school of thought says that they died from sinful activity. They were drunk, say some of them. They didn't listen to one another. Another commentator, they acted impetuously in the presence of their teacher Moses. And the creative list goes on and on, seeking light in a very dark story and meaning. There's an entirely different school of thought also seeking light and meaning. Says no, they didn't die as a punishment, even though the text seems to indicate it was a punishment, but rather this is called the kiss of God. You see, these were spiritual aspirants. The strange fire that they brought is just an expression of their longing for God, their bliss. They broke into the Holy of Holies, and that fire that seems to be slightly dangerous is nothing but just the kiss taking them. Nishika, the kiss of God. That's a second school of thought. But for me, this Shabbat, this year, the most discomforting and unsatisfactory answer feels like the most honest and meaningful one for me. This third school of thought, neither finding in this story a punishment, nor finding in it an aspirational goal, let's go die by the kiss of God, but rather a much more sobering idea, posits that this story is in conversation with a scene from the book of Samuel, from the book of Shmuel, in chapter 6. And in that story, King David wants to move the sacred ark, which isn't here, the sacred ark, that would have been a good prop, the sacred ark, and move it from one city in Israel to Jerusalem. And so they put the ark, the most holy, the most sacred of all Jewish relics, they put it onto a carriage, and along they go. But of course, the roads are not very smooth going from Givah to Jerusalem. And what happens? The ark begins to fall off of the wagon. And one very, very earnest, sincere person named Uzzah reaches out his hand to hold onto the ark, to the Aron, lest it fall to the ground. And immediately, as soon as he holds onto the ark, he's struck down by God. This story not only becomes the Haftarah, the reading tomorrow morning, the prophetic reading that is read at right on the same Shabbat as the story of Nadav and Avihu, but it speaks to a seemingly unfair, unjust, capricious God, and certainly not the sort of action a loving, kind, and tender God would commit. But it is also similar to the story of the revelation at Sinai, where at Sinai, Moses warns the people and says, be careful not to touch the mountain, lest God strike you. There's something, says this third school of thought, about the mystery and the power and the caution one should have with God. We might say more abstractly that if you want God in your midst, says this story, you can't just have the good. You have to have also the dangerous. That if you want fire to warm you, you also have to deal with fire that might burn you. If you want a holy of holies where God's presence is felt, heaven doesn't give us halves. We don't get a half of something. The power of God comes also with the mystery of God. And this is not theology, because I don't care if you believe in God tonight. I could care less about this story as it pertains to your personal theology, whether you think God did the Holocaust, didn't do the Holocaust, or you think God is a nice God or a bad God. Doesn't matter, but the story is an essential truth about power itself and about fire. The story of fire coming from heaven and consuming the altar and all the Israelites, Vayaronu, they clapped their hands and they fell on their faces. Woo-hoo! Fire from heaven! And the very next moment, something goes awry. The very same fire that they long for, they yearn for, they say, oh, please let us have fire in our midst. And then it's messy. Fire breaks out. It can't be contained. It's a bit dangerous. It's a bit risky. This understanding of the story has been in my mind the entire week, especially after I taught this story to a group of senior citizens at the Hyman Brown Center of the 92nd Street Y, because my parents, who have been attending these classes, have decided to invite almost all of their friends to come and hear me speak. And one of them, this week, unexpectedly, the mother of a friend of mine from high school, my friend Josh. Josh was just a year older than me, and in the summer of 1987, was killed in a car accident driving back from upstate New York. And as I taught the story and taught the third school of thought that says that the fire of God is a cautionary tale about what risks are involved when we ask for power, I wondered how she would hear the story. I wondered how she would take it. Here's something that I think she might have said. There's nothing riskier in the world than having a child. There's nothing riskier in the world than loving somebody and attaching oneself to that person. There's nothing riskier in the world than deep and abiding and true life. The fire of the gods is something that we all long for. The elixir of life, to be able to know that fire, that sublimity, that transcendence, that, oh, that beauty. To live is to take a risk. To be incarnated in this lifetime is to involve ourselves with the potential for the heights and, of course, the most painful loss that is imaginable. Life is unpredictable, and it's also sometimes cruel, she would say. But when you love, really love, you don't have a choice. The risk of having power but misusing it has also been on my mind this week. I remember telling you all about a young woman who came to see me at the Y and shared with me, she's a dancer in the dance company that works there, an artist. She came into my office and she said, Rabbi, I'm really struggling with the war in Gaza. And we spent an hour talking to one another. It was a very respectful, open-hearted conversation. And she told me finally at the end of this conversation, something that I'll never forget. She said to me, Rabbi, I guess in the end of this, I'd rather be hurt myself than do any harm to anyone else. For us Jews, having power is a relatively new phenomena. Unfortunately, on October 7th of this year, we had an experience that many of our ancestors lived with daily. We felt for perhaps the first time since the Holocaust what it might feel like to live in a world without power, without an army, without any defense, without any fire. And for the parents of the hostages who this Sunday will commemorate six unfathomably difficult months. Life without agency, without the capacity to keep loved ones safe, has been horrific. And yes, power can burn. Power can be messy. Power can be criminal at times. Power can be fraught. Power can be infuriating. The very same fire that came down to consume the sacrifice on the altar within one moment takes Nadav and Avihu, two innocent young men. It's complicated, and tragedy ensues. But would we live in a world without fire? Would it even remotely make sense for us to live in a world without these risks and these complications? I'm thinking so much this Shabbat about my friend Ari and his search for light in the future, his longing to find little points, little people, innovators and creatives, to not tell a story of despair and doom. And I know that for this community and almost every other one that I imagine, we are exhausted talking about danger, depression, despair. For mothers like Rachel Pollan Goldberg, there is no choice. For parents of those hostages, there is no brief pause. There's no way to say, okay, we're just going to forget about our kids who are in unimaginably horrible places at this moment. When we pray, I hope that we pray for the wisdom to use power appropriately, the wisdom to learn from our mistakes, to acknowledge them, to acknowledge the places where we've gotten things wrong, where we misused fire or asked for it in the wrong way. But we dare never, ever pray not to have the fire and its potential to warm, to protect, to build, to create, to innovate. The fires of Nadav and Avihu are still strong in each and every one of us. And on this Shabbat before the solar eclipse, I pray to God that we continue to look for light, that we continue to search for ways to uplift one another, to make meaning of these stories, and to remember, heaven doesn't give halves. Choose wisely.
Thank you for listening. Want more content like this? Subscribe to our podcast and visit romamu.org to learn more about us. Please consider making a contribution to Romamu so we can continue to fulfill our mission to help spiritual seekers deepen their connection to Jewish wisdom and practice to help them become more compassionate human beings. We hope to see you in the synagogue or the Zoomagogue soon. Romamu. Romamu. Adonai.